Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. For more than 48 years, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. And their experienced team can walk you through the car buying process side by side from test drive to service oil changes and beyond. Townsend goes through a rigorous vetting process to make sure that every pre-owned vehicle adheres to quality standards. And right now, there's plenty on the lot to choose from in various makes and models. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Automotive salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. Charcuterie boards are lighting up social media these days, but have you ever considered seafood charcuterie? According to a Johns Hopkins research study, nearly half of the U.S.'s seafood supply goes to waste, and there are few people in the food system who know how to counteract that. Enter Eric Montagny, a chef who was part of a growing number of culinary professionals changing that, applying their butchery skills and whole animal respect in a whole new watery direction. At Local Seafood in Raleigh and Durham, North Carolina, Eric transforms what previously may have been discarded into delicious products, from Botarga made from North Carolina mullet roe to a tuna bloodline burger that has so far utilized more than 1,000 pounds of tuna meat that would have been discarded, and has been named one of North Carolina Triangle's epic burgers by Eater Carolinas. He previously worked with Chef Vivian Howard at the Boiler Room Oyster Bar and was the executive chef at Raleigh's Standard Foods before joining Locals. This is all a full circle moment for a Miami-born boy who grew up fishing in the Florida Keys and left to attend Johnson & Wales in Denver with beef on the brain. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Eric.
Hey, thanks for having me on here.
Oh, I'm so excited. We didn't get a chance to sit down in person. Well, we did get a chance to sit down in person when I visited Locals in January, but we were working on an article for Sever. So we didn't have time to podcast separately from that. So I really appreciate you sitting on the phone with me today to record in this fussy app that we're going to use. Where are you sitting?
I am sitting in the Transfer Company Food Hall in Raleigh, outside of one of our locations.
Excellent. And I'm sitting inside my tiny apartment, and somebody has just started a large piece of power equipment outside my window. So,
only fitting.
I'm telling you, the world of a podcaster, I feel like people just follow me around with leaf blowers. I mean, they just do. But anyway, we're not here to talk about my super first world problems today. We're really here to talk about, I don't know, seafood. I'd love to focus today someplace that we don't focus enough in American food, inside the cutting room for fish. Are you with me for this?
Absolutely.
I think it's just something. I was working on an article last week, and I read something like 70% of our seafood is caught here and then shipped elsewhere to be cut and then shipped back. Have you experienced that?
Yes, that's correct, sadly.
Yeah. So why do you think, as a chef, that the cutting is such a thing that we have to outsource as Americans?
It's not a profession that's getting incentivized or trained very often anymore, much like butchers. You know, hiring a fishmonger is a very tough position to hire for because there aren't new classes, right? The pipelines pretty much run dry. And so what we're looking for are basically folks that are interested in seafood and we can train, or we're looking for chefs or ex-culinary professionals that are looking for a change of pace and a different lifestyle. Because as long as you have those knife skills and you have some of these other skills, they apply to fish cutting, you know, the finesse comes with practice.
I mean, you grew up cutting fish in the Florida Keys, right?
I did. So I have a bit of a different background, and I've had been cutting fish for a very, very long time.
But then you ran away from it. You went to charcuterie, right?
And I did, yeah. I went to
learn about that.
Yeah, I went to whole animal with cows, hogs, you know, chickens, goats, lambs, any land mammals, really. And I jumped into that feet first. And then, you know, it was really when I started, it was about 7 or so years ago that I actually started really cooking seafood again. Mm-hmm. And it was when I moved back from Colorado back to North Carolina that I, you know, started again falling in love with seafood all over again, in particular North Carolina seafood.
Yeah,
I was very fortunate. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and I was fortunate that the restaurants that I've been at all embraced the ethos of sourcing local, buying from the dock, buying from fishermen. And so I got to build these bonds and build these relationships with these folks. And that's very valuable in and of itself, but it's also super valuable from a chef perspective, because once you earn and you gain that trust, they'll start doing things and keeping you in mind when certain things happen. You know, for example, if for some reason someone catches a skate, and they're like, you know, typically 9 out of 10 times, I'm going to throw this back. Like, hey, I'm going to keep this one because I have a feeling Eric's going to buy it. Sure enough, they send me a text. Yeah, of course I would love to buy that. And we had it actually happen 3 weeks ago. We had 2 pomfrets that showed up on the dock. And I haven't seen a pomfret in North Carolina in 8 years previous.
Wow.
And so it was very exciting. And again, it was one of those things that they're like, hey, call Eric, because I bet he's going to want these. Sure enough, I did. And then so I, again, in turn, get to nerd out and have a lot of fun cutting a fish or working with a fish that I've never seen in my life, and I've been doing this for over 30 years, like been around fish for over 30 years.
Yeah.
So that is exciting from like a creative and a chef perspective, but then it's also really fun for our customers to come into the market. And a lot of them have come to trust us and our brand and our employees to be like, hey, what do you have today that's kind of weird and off the wall? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we've got this fish that is the first one I've seen in 8 years. I'm like, cool, well, let me have it. What can I do with it? What's it taste like? And then we go from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's so cool about locals is that it's really a hybrid. It's three things. It's a wholesale for restaurants and other businesses, and that's really how it got its start. And then it's a retail market, so people can come by and buy product like raw oysters or fish. And then it's also a restaurant in 2 locations, Raleigh and Durham, both in food halls. So there's an education aspect there that, you know, I'm a little nervous to cook a skate wing at home. But if I can eat it at the food hall and remember, you know, and then take one home and try to recreate what you did, I'll be a lot more comfortable. So that's a very different place than a lot of these traditional restaurants that you, you really honed your skills in in working in, you know, you worked in these restaurants that were real traditional. And when you came to locals, you brought that whole animal butchery idea with you and started applying it more consistently to seafood, right?
That's actually been one of the most exciting parts for me, and it was a connection that I didn't make until I started working in the cut room. So while we were waiting on construction for the restaurant to be built out, I actually got to work in the cut room. And it isn't until you see that volume of fish and then the volume of waste generation that for me it really triggered a sense of urgency to work on these butchery products, to find application for these items. An average fish is going to yield between 50, around 50% of the animal is going to be your fillet. Different species vary slightly, but 50 is about average. That's for skin on fillet. And so if you look at it from the lens that half of what you harvest out of the ocean, you're going to throw away, it's irresponsible.
Right, and
And
it's not
so,
really that nose to tail ethos that we're taught in whole animal
absolutely. And
cooking.
that was ingrained in me as a chef. And then an appreciation for seafood and for the ocean has been ingrained in me, my entire life with my background growing up on the water, my father being a fisherman, my whole family's very into fishing and in the ocean. And so that, for multiple reasons, it was a big light bulb moment for me and a calling.
So what are some of the interesting things? Just give us a quick rundown on some of the interesting charcuterie items that you've developed there. Like I know years ago I had a grouper sausage from Chef Jeremiah Bacon here in Charleston, South Carolina. Are you doing things like that?
Yeah, so we have a couple of sausages that we've been working on for a while. So we have a garlic and herb, we have a kielbasa, an andouille, we've done breakfast sausage links, we have hot dogs that we make, all done with seafood.
That kind of idea takes mindfulness in the kitchen, right? When you're looking at all of this stuff and you're seeing that different those different products that you can do. And there's a lot of meat and edible things beyond just those fillets. That's basically what you're saying with this,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
So how have you seen diners change in their interest since you've been cooking? Do you feel like American diners have become more adventurous?
I do think that we're starting to become more adventurous. And I think we're a bit behind in the global curve, but we are starting to become more aware, not only of the need to find utilization for a whole animal, but to also be willing to eat the whole animal and to trust, the chefs and the creatives preparing these things to do them in a delicious way. We are looking to move our wholesale facility into this new building, and we'll be, setting our some permanent roots down, which is very exciting because we're wanting to expand both our wholesale, our retail, and this value-added program. And so the goal is actually to be putting not only a large cut room in, but a production kitchen as well to work on these value-added products and actually get them to market in a retail fashion so that you can go to the grocery store and pick up, a shrimp and scallop hot dog.
Yes, I would eat that right now. Yeah, sounds great. Especially, I'm waiting on, you know what I'm waiting on, right?
The
Yeah.
Bottarga. Yeah, so that's on the list too.
I'm waiting for a steady supply of that.
Yeah.
Now, because I want to recreate those Bottarga French fries that you fed me. And tell me again what that dish was. I mean, they're really great, fresh hand-cut French fries. And then what do you do?
And so when they come out, we actually toss them with the drawn butter where we just clarify some butter and then we steep lemon peels, a bunch of herbs and spices in the butter. As soon as the fries come out, we toss them in butter, a little bit of sea salt, handful of Bottarga, and some fresh chives and thyme in there as well. That all gets tossed.
Yeah, so I'm gonna eat that over and over. Anytime I'm going to choose that over like poutine and gravy with
Oh,
fries
yeah.
because it stayed so crispy, you know,
Yeah.
and I mean, clarified butter. and I are really good friends. So,
I mean, how can you go wrong?
how can you go wrong? So, I'm really excited to talk to you today because I think that idea, that calmness that you have of working with chefs and then educating diners, I wonder how you think about bridging the gap when you're talking to somebody that comes in the retail market. I know that you've moved away somewhat from day-to-day operations, but when you're telling them how to cook something, what are some of the easiest techniques that you can give for success when it comes to cooking seafood at home?
One of the easiest ones, I always encourage people to bake fish. It's a very easy, especially for introduction to whole fish cooking. Baking whole fish is pretty easy and hands off, right? You can go into the market, you can pick up a fish that's already been scaled, gutted, cleaned out, and ready to go for you. And so often I talk to folks and try and encourage them, grab some herbs in the market, grab a lemon, put some herbs and lemon slices inside of the cavity, pop it on some parchment paper, and put it in the oven. I recommend about 6 to 7 minutes per pound that the fish weighs, but also the temperature depends on whether you have convection oven or non-convection at home. But I'm
And
going to
come on,
recommend
in
about.
South Carolina, I definitely have a non-convection oven.
So again, I recommend like 350 to 375. And the reason I like doing that is one, people a lot of times worry. Cooking fish at home for some reason is like one of the last frontiers for home cooks. There's a lot of stigmas, negative stigmas attached to it, that it's going to smell up your refrigerator being in there raw. It's going to smell up your home once it's cooked. And so baking kind of takes a couple of those things out where you're going to put it in the oven. Hopefully you have your fan running and you don't have to worry about any odors or anything inside. Some folks are also sometimes a bit squeamish to handle whole fish, or even fillets, similarly to raw chicken. And so this is much easier where like you can put it on a piece of parchment on your tray and you slide it into the oven, and when it comes out, it's this finished product. There's not really much else you need to do to it. And it's also very delicious and it's very healthy. And so versus, pan frying, which is personally one of my preferences, would be to pan roast fish, but also I'm gonna baste it with butter and thyme and garlic and all these things that maybe aren't super healthy. And so I do like encouraging folks to bake fish. If you're starting it out, it's a great way to do it. And then if you really want to kick it up a notch, you can go and fold it into some parchment and do an impapillon, which is a baking pseudo steaming because it's gonna steam inside of that parchment. And that really helps with your moisture retention. So you're not gonna have a dry piece of fish.
Like I like to say in my kitchen, it hedges your bets, right? It
Yep,
keeps things a little
absolutely.
more moist. And so like, if it's a little bit of a thinner piece of fish or it's a little bit of longer cooking time than really it needed, that parchment and that really envelope, and you can do that even with aluminum foil if you needed to, will help keep it moist in there.
Yep.
Especially if you add a lemon or some olive oil. But
Yep.
you're the chef, not me. I'm gonna always eat your pan fried, baste it in butter and thyme if you're gonna cook it. Does your daughter eat? You have a daughter, right?
I do, I do. She's about to be three.
Yeah, does she eat seafood?
She does. And so she is a fan of fish. We haven't done oysters yet. And so that's kind of the next big one. But fish and shrimp, she's a big fan of. And so she actually comes into the restaurant at least once a week, and at this point walks around like she owns it, and the whole staff knows her, and they all know she knows all of them. So it's pretty great.
So, what keeps you coming back creatively at this stage? Because you could be more front and center, as an executive chef in a bigger restaurant group, but you're choosing to kind of get behind the scenes and work on some more retail products and ideas. What's keeping you creatively energized like that?
I still feel like a student. I don't feel like I'm anywhere close to mastering or really reaching any sort of limits to the possibilities here. so much still to learn. There's so much still to do. And I really enjoy that. I'm very self-driven. And so I enjoy waking up in the middle of the night with like a spark and jotting some notes down on my phone, like coming back to it the next day and spending a week researching something and a million times failing at it just to get it right one time and then going from there. That's so much fun to me. And being in a place, being in an environment with a company that encourages and enables me to have that creativity, have that freedom, it's really exciting, very unique.
Very unique. And Locals is in contact. Locals is based in the Piedmont of North Carolina, but basically is continually going back and forth to the coast of North Carolina every day, right?
Yeah, right. It varies on the season, but right now we go anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week.
And
And
then
we hit
you.
different parts of the coast on different days. It's a pretty long run.
It is a very big amount of coastline for a state. I mean, I'm from North Carolina, so I'm pretty proud of that. Not that I had anything to do with that. That was geography. Do you have a favorite fish that you like as just a diner?
Yeah, right now we're actually getting into season for it too, cobia.
Oh, cobia. I haven't cooked cobia very much. I'm a little, it's a little thicker fish,
Yeah,
right?
it's a bit thicker. It's a much more dense fish. And so it's going to be density wise, it's going to be comparable to even like swordfish. Like is a very dense fish, but is very, very rich in intramuscular fat. And so it's actually often called the pork chop of the sea because you'll find marbling on it like you will beef and pork.
But it probably takes offense at that, right?
Yeah, probably a
It's like,
little bit.
hey.
That's definitely my favorite fish to eat. When it comes around, the season is pretty short here. I tend to buy a good bit of it and put some up for myself and my family throughout the year so that we can have some. And I
Do
do
you
try
pickle
and,
it?
I never have pickled it, but I'm sure you could pickle or do some sort of like escabeche style
Yeah, so I
preservation
pickle.
technique. Absolutely. That goes right back to, again, just like there's so much possibility.
Well, do you feel that you are going to be able to, with this new prepared or value-added items, do you think that you're starting to change the game? Because you're working with retail people, but don't you also supply to other chefs as well? Have you seen an uptick in things that they like to get that are value added from Locals?
I don't, none of the chefs we're working with are necessarily like buying sausages from us. However, where we have seen uptick, which is also exciting, is in a desire to work with these offcuts themselves. And so previously, we used to sell, cut all the collars off of fish and, take them to markets and they wouldn't sell. And then, we take them home, or we give them to staff, whatever it may be. Now, we don't have any fish collars. I actually had to take them off the menu at one of our restaurants, because we can't produce enough fish collars. There's obviously only two per animal, and so there's a cap there. But that's such a great problem to have.
That is a wonderful problem to have. And outside of our market, Charleston has a big run on fish collars, and I know your area does too, what you're just saying. But it's one of the easiest quote quote off cuts to cook at home. And they're more inexpensive, but it provides these nuggets of fish that are just really, really thick. And once chefs realize that, there's just really no going back. Not that you don't love a good fillet and things like that as well, but I want to know if you could give us a peek. And I'm going to ask you some of these final questions. I'm going to ask you what is making you hungry, but we've talked so much about your creativity and I can tell it's really percolating. Is there something right now that you're trying to perfect at Locals that you're willing to share with us?
So right now we've been working on a couple of different things, and a lot of, well, sometimes what we work on isn't necessarily cutting edge, and this is a good example of it, but shrimp cakes. So we're working on some shrimp cakes right now. And shrimp cakes have been around and have been a regular recipe and, have been featured on menus for a long time. It's not a new dish. However, we're working on shrimp cakes with shrimp pieces. So basically, as shrimp get, peeled and deveined for, retail packing at the warehouse on the coast, there's always tiny pieces that get left behind, right? There's a piece of the tail or a chunk that got cut off, and those are what we're trying to find utilization for. And so that's been a lot of fun to be have this product that, again, is waste, right? It's like, hey, this, was part of the discard pile. This is all meat. Well, it's not discard, it's meat. And so finding ways to utilize that has been a lot of fun. So we've been working on that. And then really just kind of retooling some of our sausages, because as we scale up the recipes and size, there's just some tweaking that goes on. Not all things scale the same way, right? If a recipe calls for one clove and you do a 10 times batch, 10 cloves is probably going to be too much.
I mean, I would try it just like that. But, no vampires getting close to me. I eat so much garlic, so. But I like that idea, what you're saying when you said it's not discard, it's meat. And so that's a linguistics change. It's a mindset change, but it's actually a terminology change, right?
And I think that's very important because, we eat with our eyes and with our ears first. If food doesn't look or sound appealing, your chances of trying it dwindle pretty dramatically. And so anytime we've done new recipes or new ingredients or new items, I've always found it very important to repackage them in a recognizable fashion. Going back to the bloodline, that's why we went with a burger first. Because I think it's important if you try and go too off the wall for it, you're going to really narrow your audience. And the goal of this for me isn't my own creativity, and it's to get more people to enjoy these items for their own good and also for the good of the environment and of this resource that we're harvesting and we're stewards of. And so I need to cast a wide net in order to be successful in doing that.
And that's a good seafood pun.
Yeah, there we go. The dad jokes just come out now.
They do. Once she turns three, you can make jokes and make her laugh, right?
Yep.
So what is one aspect of your job that really meshes like a puzzle piece with a natural aspect of your personality?
I am very OCD, and I really appreciate and thrive in a very clean and organized environment. And because of our processing facility and the inspections that come with that and the liability that comes with processing large amounts of anything, but in for retail consumption, you have to be very clean, very organized, and very thorough. And then also in the sense of production and value-added production, asset plans are very important. So following those steps, coming up with those steps, is all very important. And that lends into my personality very well, because I'm very much a structured and regimented and systemic person by nature. And I enjoy things to be very tidy and very clean. And I take a lot of pride in that.
We're very glad about that, especially when, you're handing us a raw oyster. That's
Yep.
great. What is one thing keeping you up at night? Quick fire.
Probably the insomnia and the caffeine play equal parts. Other than that, I put a lot of pressure on myself to not only do a good job, but to take care of our people, to take care of our employees. And so I invest quite a bit emotionally and mentally into the well-being of our staff. I care a lot about them. A lot of folks have been with us as long as I have. We've got a lot of employees that have started day one with these restaurants and are still here even through the pandemic. And so really just making sure our folks are taken care of the way I have. And you learn sometimes by example, sometimes you learn by bad example.
Right.
So
Yeah.
owning up to my mistakes and trying to be better.
And then giving everybody Botarga fries, that would be helpful.
Everyone gets Botarga fries.
It's like Oprah. Everyone gets a car. Everyone gets Botarga fries.
That's right.
Well, we all know basically based on this conversation that that's what would be in my magic picnic basket today. But I'm not here to really talk about that. I'm really to talk about what would be in your magic picnic basket. So this is something that I reserve just for Southern Fork listeners. It really is something with which I can time travel. I can go back in time and ask somebody to make just one more taste of something that you wish you could try again or have again. I can source for you and I can cook a little bit. So I would love to bring you some of your favorite things. And like I said, that would be in my basket today. I know that as food professionals, we have this kind of conversation a lot, and things change the more that we experiment with our palate and eat, in different restaurants in different countries. So, what can I bring you today in your picnic basket?
It's still going to be seafood, funny enough. But there's a lot of seafood that I don't get out here, right? Because we do source very strictly close to home. And I was fortunate enough when I worked in Colorado to spend a good amount of time working with West Coast seafood. And for me, uni is one that I miss quite a bit. And I still get it from time to time, but I'm very particular also about where it comes from, because it's an ingredient that again is should be revered and should be treated very well and taken care of. And so, yeah, that would probably be it for me.
And what do you like to eat with uni?
Honestly, I could sit down with a bowl of like very good sushi rice and uni. And just some good toasted nori sheets and make hand rolls and be the happiest person on earth.
Do you have a beverage that you like to sip with that?
If I'm going with that, I'm going either probably sake, just because I don't want to go with anything too strong because the uni is just, should be forward facing.
Okay, and explain to us what that means out of chef speak. What does that mean?
Uni can be a very delicate flavor. If you hadn't had it before, it's quintessential ocean flavor. If you love oysters, uni is like an oyster with such a buttery texture, and it's just absolutely amazing. I think the two, compare pretty well to each other because of their brine, but they can also be very delicate. A lot of the nuances and flavors in those can be lost if you're drinking something strong. And so, as much as like my favorite cocktail is a last word, right? So, green chartreuse and gin, lime juice, cherry liqueur, wonderful, very refreshing cocktail. But that would get lost, or the uni would get lost behind that cocktail.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, not only are you teaching us that fish collars are definitely worth eating at home, you're also teaching us just a little bit about pairing today, Chef.
Awesome.
So, thank you so much. If people want to learn more about Eric and local seafood, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. I'm going to have images there as well as the face behind the voice, like I always do. If you like what you hear, there are more than 270 interviews of some of the best culinary voices in the American South. And it comes directly out of my food writing and my research. And Eric and I have chatted before, and we chatted most recently for Sever Magazine. And I said, I've got to have you on to talk what we call fish charcuterie. So, thank you so much today for taking the time to chat with me and deal with this app on the phone.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much, Steph. It's always fun to chat with you. It's like talking to an old friend. It's
Oh, good.
great to get to
Well,
nerd out. So thank you for
thank
having me.
you. I hope we're old friends that send other friends Batarga.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know I'm blatant, but it is really good, Eric. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Steph.
Hello, and welcome to Talking with My Mouthful. Just a quick reminder today that spring is here in the South. And when spring arrives in the South, all the good foods like asparagus and strawberries arrive too. But beyond that, a great way for you to learn more about what's grown locally in your area and how good it can taste and who is growing it is that when spring arrives in the South, so does farmers market season. So some places in the South have year-round farmers markets. Many more just have seasonal markets, and most of them begin in April or late March. So it is farmers market high season before it gets 100 degrees in the shade in places like Columbia, South Carolina. And I remember how hot Birmingham, Alabama was. So get out there, get out to the farmers market, bring your reusable bag. You knew I was going to say that, right? And shop, get to know some of the people who make your food and buy something delicious and come home and cook it. Thanks so much for listening today, and I look forward to talking with you again soon. Have a great week.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?